Greg, where you at? Greg's going to introduce our speaker for tonight.
My name is Greg. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And it is an absolute honor and a privilege to stand before you tonight to introduce Mike Dubs Williams. Oh, man. Man, it's so awesome to see the light come on. And it's even more awesome to see that light come on and it passes on to somebody else. And Mike is a perfect example of that. God got to work, went through the steps, did what he had to do, faced some fear, made some amends, you know, and now he's growing up and he's helping others. And that's what this is all about. So with that, I'm going to give you Mike.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
my sobriety date is May 21st, 2010, and I have a sponsor, Greg, and I have a great group of guys around me who help to keep me sober on a daily basis, and those two things have been pivotal in my recovery. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I grew up in a town called Auburn, Alabama. And, you know, I had a pretty great childhood, actually. You know, one of the things I kind of used as an excuse when I first came in about why I didn't belong here, why I wasn't an alcoholic, was the fact that, like, you know, I didn't have trauma or I didn't go through enough or I come from a good family. You know, I'm not the type of person who is an alcoholic. So, you know, yeah. Right. And so, like, you know, growing up, you know, everything externally was really good, but internally, you know, I was a confused kid. You know, I grew up around a lot of people who didn't look like me. I grew up, you know, with this, still a lot of people who don't look like me. you know, with this impression that because, like, you know, my family comes with some means that, like, you know, I felt I had a lot of guilt associated with that, and, you know, a lot of times I kept people at a distance. You know, honestly, I don't think that I had any close friends until really I started using, which is at a pretty young age. And, like, so, you know, like, I had all the toys and, like, all the people around me that, you know, was supposed to look good, and I was doing well in school, but on the inside, you know, I never fit in, you know, and I didn't really fit in, you know, and I purposely set up my life in a way that kept you at a distance. And that stuff came up in early sobriety, and that's some stuff I had to deal with. So fast forward to my first drink was at 13. And, you know, the teenage years is supposed to be a time when, you know, you're starting to discover who you are. You're starting to build your identity. You're starting to, you know, start to turn into an adult. And when I drank for the first time, it was more of a thing. It was more about, it was just something to do, you know. It was like, I didn't feel good about myself. People seemed like that made them feel good. You know, my parents threw a lot of parties when I was younger, and I saw adults drinking. I thought, you know, it seems like they're having a good time and, like, not worried about every little thing that's happening at every little moment. So, you know, I thought, you know, maybe I'll give this a try. And, you know, at first, like, you know, a lot of people talk about, like, well, the first time they had a drink, it was, like, it. And they knew it. Right? For me, like, when it first started, like, it was just I wanted to be cool. I wanted to fit in. Girls seemed to like the fact that I drank, probably the wrong ones. And, like, it was something to do, but, like, as, you know, like I talked about, like, you know, that's the time when you're starting to form your identity, and that became my identity. That was the thing that I was, right? So quickly it progressed from, like, this is kind of cool. I mean, it made me feel good, right, which was something I wasn't used to, but it didn't extinguish the fire, per se. So, like, that quickly morphed into, like, this is who I am. This is what I do. You know, I'm the kid, you know, who's 14 who is, like, the party person. You know, I'm the alcoholic druggy kid. And so, like, you know, as things progressed, like, things got more and more wrapped up in that identity, and, like, my thinking just got sicker and sicker, and I got more confused and more confused. And the problem with drinking is that it was a temporary fix to my permanent problem, right? My problem was me. And, like, you can drink that away if you want, but in the end, that just results in debt, right? There's nowhere to go from that. So, like, you know, my drinking increased and increased, and eventually it became, like, a daily thing, and it was, like, obviously a problem. Like, I was, you know, the book describes different ways. There's, like, moderate drinkers and heavy drinkers and then alcoholics. I was definitely a heavy drinker, possibly an alcoholic by 16, 17. And, like, people were starting to notice. My friends, who also were the party people, started to be like, you know, what's up with that? You know, what's up with you? What's wrong with you? And, like, you know, it was different. The way that I drank was different. And, you know, I was, you know, and the thing about alcohol for me is that, like, as things started to compound, as I became more confused about who I was, it warped not like my sense of self and like everything else about me, right? So like my parents are good people. I consider them to be good people, right? They tried to instill some pretty basic principles, a lot of the same principles that this program has instilled in me. And like I wasn't hearing it, right? I developed this type of attitude that like I didn't need you, I didn't want you, and I didn't care. I didn't care about you, and I didn't care about me. And it didn't really matter what happened to me because this is the way it's got to be. You know, I'm an alcoholic to the end. And so, you know, and this is at a pretty young age. So my parents were like, whoa, you know, right? So they confronted me about it, and they sent me to therapy. I lied to my therapist, you know, good alcoholic, like, you know. If he could have helped me, you know, I certainly wasn't going to let him. And so, you know, as things progressed, you know, they finally, like, hit a wall, and they were like, yo, we got to do something. So they tried to send me to treatment. I refused to go to treatment, so they sent me to boarding school instead. And this was, like, one of the first times I realized, honestly realized the severity of my problem. Because, like, I went to boarding school, and I detoxed because I had been drinking that much. But I detoxed while I was at boarding school, and I realized that, like, this could be, like, a serious issue. Like, I need to do something about this. But, you know, as soon as the pain went away, the thought went away that maybe I should change something. And immediately I brought the party with me to boarding school. Got kicked out, naturally. And so there I was back in my hometown again. And I was out from under my parents' wing. I decided to go to community college, and the wheels started to come out. So I'm about 19 at this point. And really, drinking is not working anymore. But I don't know what else to do. So at this point, you know, those drugs and alcohol were done. I mean, you know, it had gotten to the point where I even knew that it wasn't going to work. But it was the only thing that I had. You know, it was the only thing that I could cling on to that I thought would help me, would make me feel better. And so, you know, it continued on in that miserable, vicious cycle. You know, a good friend of mine says, you know, my problem is that I'm not okay in the present moment with who I am and the way that I feel. So I will do anything to change that. I will adjust who's around me, where I am, what I'm putting into my body, so on and so forth. It doesn't matter. As long as I don't have to deal with the fact that I'm me, and I'm here right now. So, you know, spiritually, you know, alongside while this is happening, like, my spiritual life, you know, I can see it now, but I couldn't see it then. But, you know, gaining some clarity and working this program, I can look back and I can see it. I was becoming really, really sick, right? So I had, like, rejected the church and, like, was like, I'm an atheist. Much to my parents' dismay and horror. And, like, I mean, they were horrified. And so, like, you know, and I was, like, 14 when I did that. I was like, I'm not going to church. And so, you know, they were like, they didn't know what to do, so they were like, all right. And so, you know, I turned from an atheist to an entity. If you were to talk to me about God, then I was going to tell you about how you were wrong in very intricate details. I was going to cut you down, right? And I look back on that now, and it's really, you know, it's a sad thing. You know, it's a sad thing because, you know, being a person who believes now, like, you know, I wonder how many people, especially because everybody was so insecure at that age, like, how many people I was like, you know, I made them, like, doubt, you know, whatever faith they may have had. Or, you know, what damage did that really do to people? You know, that's something that, you know, I can't really atone for. So, you know, okay, so I'm at this point, I'm physically getting sick, too. And I'm spiritually sick, and I'm emaciated. I'm, like, 120 pounds. My parents are like, what is going on? So they, like, pull the plug on the whole operation, right? They find out that I failed out of school and that I had just been, like, going to school. And they're like, you definitely need to move back in. So, yeah, it's like, and I was, like, appalled at that, right? So I was like, how dare you expect me to move back in, you know? Really, really, like, crazy, right? So, you know, addiction for me, it really runs deep. There's some real crazy stuff going on. So I move back into my parents' house, and shortly thereafter, my uncle commits suicide. Now, this was, like, really challenging for me. We were really close. You know, he had really inspired me. You know, he had written books and, like, you know, done these things that I wanted to do, and I saw him as, like, a spiritual, like, he claimed to have all this spirituality. You know, I don't know if that's real, or maybe he did, I don't know. But that really sent me down a spiral. Basically, you know, it was just the perfect excuse to continue my behavior when somebody would approach me about it. I'd be like, well, my uncle committed suicide, so you can't tell me how to feel. You can't tell me that I can't be upset about this. And, you know, I had some really good friends who were also part of people. One of my good friends said to me, she said, I don't care how you feel. I'm caring about, like, why are you killing yourself? Like, you know, at this point, I was losing people, like, left and right, like really close relationships. People were starting to distance themselves from me because, like, I was a mess. Like, you couldn't trust me. You couldn't be around me. I would steal from you. I would lie to your face. I would tell this person that you said that so I could get something from that person. And then when that person came to you, I would tell you a lie about how I didn't really tell that person that. It wasn't really like that, you know. And I always had an excuse for my behavior, always. So, like, this house of cards that I had built, you know, this identity that I had built that was truly a lie, you know, it wasn't anything. It all came crashing down, and, you know, I was on probation for getting arrested. I got arrested a lot. Like, that was, like, a continue. Every 6 months, I was, like, in jail. And so, like, yeah, I just couldn't seem to, I couldn't figure it out either, too. So I'm, like, sitting in jail, and I'm just like, why do I keep getting arrested? I know it's not the drugs and alcohol. I can't do that. I can possibly do that. So, you know, so I'm on probation. I'm back living at my parents' house. My life is falling apart. I failed out of school. I'm working a dead-end job. And, you know, and I can't do anything, right, except for drink and show up for work drunk and go home and drink more. So, you know, at this point, my parents are thinking that I'm at least, like, more sober than normal because I'm on probation, but I had, like, lied my way out of getting drug tested in probation by tricking my probation officer into thinking that the treatment place that I was at was drug testing me and telling them that my treatment center was drug testing me. So, like, things were getting really bad, and my parents were really, they were done with me. They were ready to kick me out. And the day that I got off probation, I decided to go celebrate with some friends. It was 4 days before my 21st birthday, and May 14th. And I got arrested again. And I woke up in jail, and I thought, what is the point of this? What is the point of living? So, you know, I decided that I was just going to go on a bender. So that's what I did. And the bender was crazy. Like, I don't really remember very much. I mean, it was like 2 weeks and, like, it was like nothing there really. And so I woke up in my ex-girlfriend's house and in her parents' house, actually. Yeah, and her mom was like, and we were really close, me and my ex-girlfriend, her family were really close, and her mom was like, you need to do something. You need to go to treatment or something. figure it out. And so, you know, I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I went, alcoholic. And I went into the bathroom and I looked at the mirror and I had a profound experience. I, basically, what my therapist later, or my case manager later explained to me was, I just looked in the mirror and I saw death. I knew it was over. It, you know, it was the end of the run. The fun was done. So, you know, I looked at myself in the mirror for like 30 minutes and I broke down crying. I was in tears, you know, I was a mess, right? And I was like, I was just really lost and really confused. So I show up at treatment 4 days later. They couldn't take me for 4 days, so my parents basically locked me in the house and I detoxed by myself. That was an experience. There was some really weird stuff going on there in my head. And So I show up at treatment, and all of that, you know, that experience that I had at my ex-girlfriend's parents' house was gone. You know, all of the resolve that I had about quitting was gone, right? So the one thing that was apparent to me when I went to treatment was that drugs and alcohol were no longer going to work for me. In fact, they had stopped working a long time ago, and really I was kind of happy that I knew that was done. Right? So I knew that life had decided, or God had decided, that drugs and alcohol were not going to be the way. Now, there were a million other things that I can get high off of, but that drugs and alcohol were no longer going to be my way. And when I got to treatment, I, like, bucked everything else, right? I thought, you know, I'll just not do drugs and alcohol, and I'm not going to do AA. I'm not going to sit in these meetings. I'm not going to talk to these people. And immediately, those same walls that I had always built were back in place. I was immediately distancing myself. I was the person with 10 days clean. When you would say, how are you doing? I'd be like, I'm great. I'm fantastic. My life couldn't be better. I'm 21 and in rehab. You know, and so, like, yeah, really crazy stuff, right? And so, you know, I got broken down, basically, in treatment. One of my case managers just took it to me. And he really, you know, showed me, or allowed me, he broke my ego down enough that it allowed me to see the truth of the situation, which was that my whole life had been a really bad track record. And I should not continue to try to do the things that I was doing. I should not try to run it myself, and that maybe I should accept the help that was offered to me, you know, and it wasn't cheap help either. So maybe I should just sit down and be quiet for a little bit. And so, you know, that's what I did, you know. And so I get out of treatment, and, you know, I'd love to say that when I got out of treatment, like, hit the ground running, right, and I did everything right, but, like, that's not my story. That's really not what happened. So I get out of treatment, and, like, I'm still, like, looking for other things, like, to fill my void, right? I'm like, maybe it'll be ex-girlfriends. Maybe I can work those in somehow. And, like, that didn't work. Like, I'll spend a bunch of money and, like, you know, buy a bunch of stuff, and then maybe that'll work. Like, that didn't work. Maybe I'll just watch TV all day and drink Red Bulls and stay up all night. And, like, break curfew. And, I was like, I will do what, like, I will do anything, right, to try to feel different. Right? I was just still in that same place where I was just not okay with myself, right? I was not okay with myself. I was not okay with where I was in life. I was not okay being here. So, you know, eventually I exhausted all other resources, and I had to break it down. And so called up my sponsor, and we started doing step work. And, you know, the thing about the steps is, like, I don't know. My intentions probably weren't the best. Like, I wanted a life, right? I wanted, like, stuff. I wanted to go back to school. I wanted to have a career and a family. And, like, you know, I heard people talk about peace and, you know, serenity and happiness in meetings, but, like, that all sounded like a fable to me. I thought that those things were the result of getting the stuff. So, like, when I started working the steps, like, that was what I was all about, right? I was like, I need to save this amount of money, and this time I need to re-enroll in school, and, like, I did a lot of the things. But, like, the thing about the steps that's so amazing to me is that they worked me, right, from the inside out, right? So I was, like, you know, going to do them to the best of my ability, but I didn't expect any of the results that you guys talked about. I didn't expect any of that stuff to happen for me. So, you know, I set out working the steps, and I did them as honestly as I could at that time. Now, was it 100%, like, accurate now that I look back on it? No, it wasn't, right? So, like, to me, that just shows that, like, that's something that I need to continue to do in my daily life. I need to continue working these steps because as I become more aware of what's going on around me, my sense of reality changes. So, you know, I can, it's not like I'm not a one and done type deal. So I started working these steps and I'm still acting crazy a little bit, right? Like I'm still trying to like control things and manipulate things. And I get through the steps and everybody talks about the fourth step is so hard. And, to me, I just did it, right? Like, I procrastinated for, like, 3 weeks, and then I just did it in a day. And it was, like, now it's over. And, like, this, and then I went into the fifth step. Now, the fifth step was much harder than writing it down. Because that meant I had to tell you guys that, or not you guys, but just one guy, that like, maybe I wasn't all that I imagined myself to be. You know, maybe I was... not a good guy, really, you know, and the truth of the matter is that when I was using and drinking, I wasn't a good guy. I was not a good person, you know, I mean, you know, it's like Martin Luther King said, you know, I want to be judged by my actions, and if you take a look at my actions, then you should judge accordingly, you know, I was a lot of things, but being good was not one of them. So I did that, and like it was a real eye opener for me. And I started, like this is how crazy I am. So I started to try to control like the pace at which I changed, right? So I like tried to kick it into hyperdrive. So I was like, I'm just like not gonna do any of that stuff anymore, right? So it's still me being me, right? So like. Really, when I look back on it now, like, I didn't really have a good grasp on the third step and what that really meant, right? I wasn't allowing God to come through me and work through me. I was trying to still control the situation. I was still trying to be the one who ran the show. And, you know, it didn't work out for me, right? So, like, I built up this idea of myself, right? And even, like, to my peers around me, like, I was, like, going to be Mr. Super Recovery. Like, man, and I'm still guilty of it still today sometimes. But, like, you know, the truth of the matter was that I really didn't know anything. Like, you know, my experiences were pretty scant. So, like, I continued on with the steps in, like, 6 and 7, and I really didn't pay enough attention to those steps. I was like, all right, God will handle it. You know, like, easy cop-out, like always. And then I got to 8 and 9. And I don't know what it is about step 9, but that step broke me more than anything else. Like, I had so much fear and anxiety about stepping up to the people I had harmed and saying to them, not only that I'm sorry, but what can I now do to make it right? I was afraid people were going to do some crazy stuff, like, well, you know, $1,000 would be cool. You know, but like, you know, like, but seriously, though, I had a lot of anxiety about it, and I almost didn't do a couple of them. And one of the hardest ones to do that was actually one of the most fulfilling was I made an amends to my mother, right? And my mother went through a lot of these changes with me, right? So she was the person who was going to fix it. She was going to save me. And then she moved to the point where I was like, there's no saving me. I don't know what to do, right? And so, you know, I asked her, I was like, you know, I need to know how I made you feel. And she let me know. And, you know, we both cried. And like it was a really intense moment in our relationship. But the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, she was like, you know, because I had a lot of financial amends to make to her, like, because I was lying to her the whole time. She was paying my rent, saying I was in school. I was doing, you know, I was, like, taking money from her on, like, on the side. And, like, she was just like, just stay sober. Could you just please? Like, you know, like, God. Like, you know, because, like, I really racked him. Like, you know, I probably, you know, I had more regret about what I put my parents through probably than anybody else because, you know, they didn't deserve it, you know, and it's, you know, and I think that, well, my mom told me that they blame themselves a lot, like, what if we would have just done this, or, like, you know, we should have been around more, or, you know, whatever, but really that has nothing to do with it, you know, it was about me, you know, I wasn't okay, and it wasn't because of them. So, you know, I made my nice step amends, and I got a couple of people who were like, just please don't ever talk to me again, which was cool, though, you know, it's like, I tried, I did my best, you know, if you don't want me to talk to you again, that's the way it's got to be. But, you know, and so I moved on, did 10 and 11, and 11, you know, 10 is my daily thing, and I don't write enough, I should write more, you know, honestly. But, you know, it's very important to keep up maintenance because, like, for me, like, I'm having to go through another 4-step right now because I don't write enough. So I let a lot of stuff build up inside me, and, like, now I feel like, oh, great, got to go through the whole thing again instead of just writing, you know, I could have just written it out on a daily basis and addressed it when it came up, but instead I let it build up. And, like, 11 to me has become, like, a major part of my life, prayer and meditation, building that conscious contact with God, because the thing that I found through working the steps was that, like, for me, for my problem, there is no solution but a spiritual solution. If I want to be okay, then that's all that I have. So, you know, if I'm not putting forth some devotion, if I'm not giving God any of my time, then really, you know, what is the point of it? You know, I'm going to be back in the same boat because for me, like, you know, a lot of the steps that allowed me to clear it out so that God could come in. And on a daily basis, I need to let him know that I appreciate that I'm glad that he's with me, pray for the people around me, you know. So for me, the prayer and the meditation has become a key part of my recovery. And yeah, moving on to step 12, this was one of my Superman recovery steps, right? So I was going to, like, sponsor, like, 28 dudes. And, like, you know, I'm going to run AA. So, really sick. So, like, you know, but the thing that I had to realize is that, like, you know, like Greg said, like, there is no better thing in this program than being able to pass on what was given to me and see somebody go from when they first come in, because y'all know how we look when we first come in. Like, I couldn't even talk to people when I first came in. I had such bad social anxiety. I was, like, just walking around in circles. But, like, to see somebody when they first come in, to see, you know, them grow through this program, to see them change, is more amazing than anything else. And for me, like, you know, it's the thing on a daily basis, I would say, on a daily basis, if I'm not trying to help somebody else in some way, if I'm not trying to get outside myself, then I can easily find myself right back in the same position that I was before. Because when I am self-involved, bad things happen. Because something about my brain is just not right. It's just a little off. So, I mean, it is. Like, it starts going and it doesn't stop. So, you know, and then, you know, one of my good friend's favorite things, practicing these principles in all our affairs. You know, it's funny because right before I came in to treatment, right before my bender, maybe it was actually the night that I got arrested that set this whole thing in motion. My dad came to my bedside. I had developed a scheme to move to Philadelphia. Like, I was going to move to Philadelphia and, like, cure my alcoholism that way. And my dad said to me, he said, you know, son, every man needs a set of principles that he lives by, and he needs a spiritual connection with something. He's like, he doesn't have to be my God, but it's got to be something. You know, and that, and, like, you know, I was like, whatever. You're crazy. And then I came in here, and you guys were like, you know what you really need is a set of principles to live by. Probably could have saved myself some trouble, but, you know, but I couldn't. So, like, you know, to have a set of principles to live by is extremely important. And it's important for me, you know, to be honest up here with you guys, because, you know, if I can't be honest, then I got nothing. I am not always following these principles. There are a lot of times when I do things that are just not even in congruence with anything that my higher power would want me to do. And the thing is that, like, I have to give myself some allowance, because if I start coming through the back door and judging myself, then it's almost the same thing as me saying that, like, I somehow have control over my disease. Right? I have to understand that I have no control over my alcoholism. The only thing that saves me on a daily basis is God. So, you know, I do the best that I can, but, you know, a lot of times I fall short. And, you know, I personally feel like I need to ask forgiveness for that. You know, I don't know if anybody else does that or not, but that's something that's part of my spirituality. I feel I need to say I'm sorry to God and be like, I'll try to do better. So, you know, sobriety has been amazing, though. Right. So when I came in, I was working a dead end job. I was about to get fired from, living at home, had failed out of school, and, like, since I got sober, a lot of the external things have come back. Like I have a car now. Like, I had wrecked, like, so many cars that my parents were like, no more. So, but then, you know, I got sober, and my parents were a little weird about me getting sober. They were just like, here's a bunch of responsibility. Don't call us. I hope you do well. And I was like, oh, my God. But, you know, I stepped up. So, I mean, they did the right thing. But, I got a car. I got an apartment. I'm back in school. You know, all those are really great things. And, like, for me, like, a lot of the stuff that I was drinking over was, like, I'm a failure. Can't do anything right. I give up. You know, it was a lot of, like, defeated attitude. And, like, now to have, like, a sense of purpose, like, hopefully I'll be going to school and getting my biopsychology degree, and I think I want to work in the addiction field. I'm sure, but I mean, you guys can be trying. I think I want to work in the addiction field. And, like, the reason that I feel that way is because when I come into these rooms and I see you guys, and I see somebody new, and I see that they're suffering, I identify with their suffering. I look at them and I say, I am you. I know what you've been through. And, like, for me, it's almost like I've been called to do that. Like, I need to somehow help with the problem. So, you know, all the external stuff came back, and, like, I'm still kind of broke, but better. And, like, you know, and my family is back, which is amazing. You know, me and my family's relationship has turned into something I never thought was even possible. Like, me and my father couldn't be in the same room before without getting into a shouting match. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. So we generally just kept our distance from each other. And now, like, when I go home, we have conversations. He treats me like a man, which is something that I probably don't even deserve, really. And, you know, he listens to what I have to say, and if he disagrees, then he agrees to disagree. You know, he doesn't treat me like that 13-year-old kid, because, like, part of, like, my drinking was, like, I never, like, progressed past that point. I was still 13 when I came in. Like, I was defiant. I was a rebel, you know. You couldn't tell me what to do, you know. I'm grown. I felt that way at 13, which is crazy. But, so, you know, he treats me like a man. He doesn't talk down to me. He doesn't treat me like a child. And, you know, like, for me and him to be able, for him to say, he said to me when I was home on Christmas break, which is like amazing. He said to me, I no longer worry about you on a daily basis. I just assume that you're doing okay, which was huge for me. Like, because I was a kid, you know, and my sister talked to me about this. She was like, you know, I'm a little resentful at you because you were the kid who always got all the attention, always getting bailed out, always the one who mom and dad would drop everything for, you know, and you just kept messing up. They kept giving you chances and you kept messing up. And then here I am, I do everything right, and I get nothing. Like, everybody's just like, no, she's fine. So like, you know, for me to, like, shed that role was huge for me because, like, you know, I don't want to be that person anymore. You know, I don't want to be the person who's constantly calling home, like, can I get, like, $500 more? Or, like, you know, saying, like, so this thing kind of happened, and I kind of need you to call a lawyer. Not a big deal, though, you know, and, like, you know, I don't want to be that person anymore, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the chance not to be. You know, for me, like, without this program, you know, I wouldn't have any of that stuff. And, you know, all that stuff is great, and, you know, all the friends that I've made, you guys are amazing. A lot of y'all here tonight, I appreciate that. And, you know, all that stuff is great, and you know, my life is extremely blessed today. But to me, like, the one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that I, like, literally had given up on, right? Like, I was just going to try to box my brain into submission. But, like, it has given me peace of mind and, like, internal peace and, like, the sense that things are going to be okay. And that's something to me that, you know, you can't put a price on. You know, I can honestly say today, and, like, I don't know how much of this is tainted because I have all this stuff, but, like, if all the external stuff went away, but on the inside I still felt the way that I feel, you know, I think that I'd be okay. You know, because stuff is just stuff. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. You know, but the relationships that I have with people, those mean something. And the way that I feel on the inside and the way that I feel when I am actively seeking out a connection with my higher power, that means everything. So, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, what can you say? It's kind of dope. But, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I know.
I always like to close with a little bit of a closing remark, you know, and the one thing that I was thinking, you know, was